previous consideration, the operation of the tempic field on the electric field was proposed as the starting point. If, however, the initial operation was on the magnetic field, an additional complication gets injected. The electric field so generated can have its required divergence only if the whole system is folded back on itself. This establishes a condition where the magnetic field is entirely closed on itself about the tempic field core, with the electric field interlaced with alternating polarity. Picturesquely, it would look like a string of magnetic donuts of alternating magnetic direction stuck together with electrostatic icing of alternating polarity and all threaded onto a string of increased tempic field and placed inside a tube of decreased tempic field. A most complicated picture, but one which does exist in this universe and has some remarkable properties. For lack of a better name, it is called tensor energy. Tensor energy carries its tempic field with it, so it is therefore not subject to propagation, and both ends of the beam are actually simultaneous, that is, interval zero. The beam does not dissipate and has the same numerical values at the receiving end as it has at the transmitting end. Regardless of the combination of field conditions encountered at the receiving end, the same relationships are maintained as existed at the transmitting end. Reversing the initial polarity of the magnetic field will place the decreased tempic field on the inside and increased on the outside, so that several tensor beams can be stuck together as a cable. Since a tensor beam does not have any external field of any kind, it is immune to any and all outside field effects. The only manifestation external to the beam itself is the tempic field gradient of the outer sheath. The building blocks of matter. When the basic particle was developed, it was tacitly stated that only the first six parameters would be considered. However, during the development, there were many instances when the higher parameters were invoked, particularly those of the fourth fabric, so that not only could the particle itself be visualized, but some idea might evolve as to how it might be related to other particles. When all the parameters have been applied, there exists a particle having form along with many others of its kind and having certain definite relationships to them and possible of combination with others to form purposeful aggregates. Two particles will merge into a single particle if they can be so arranged that more than half the reality is in common. Since the basic particle is shaped like a toroid, stacking them is rather obviously the way to achieve this. We can put them together alternately with opposite polarity, where we use the point where this basic condition no longer holds. Remembering that the tempic field is an inverse Schwarzschild field, the electric is an inverse square field, and the magnetic is an inverse cube field, the coherence of the various fields will be different. There will be reached limits beyond which the system will not be stable with simple stacking. We can then stick the stacks together sideways, however, and then stick another stack on the ends of the resulting assembly, and so on. Electrons and positrons, as we know them, are basic particles, and protons and neutrons are simply stacks of these with either an odd or an even number in the stack. Mesons are merely fragmented stacks. There are quite a variety of other bits and pieces made up of basic particles stuck together through their field coherence, with varying degrees of stability being displayed according to how close to the half-in and half-out rule they are. Since it is rather obvious that no pattern of stacking can ever make all the fields involved equally interpenetrating, there must be some pattern of leftover fields manifesting outside the composite particle. And these are the fields which establish the characteristics of matter as we know it. Study of the relative configurations of the electric and magnetic fields establishes the electric charge and the configuration of the family of basic particles which the composite particle attracts. The electrons will drift into the electric field and then attach themselves over appropriate poles to such an extent that interpenetration can be established between the electron field and the residual fields of the composite particles. The number of poles and the number of unit charges determine the elements as we identify these systems. The temping field, being purely scalar in nature, merely contributes to the manner in which changes can occur in the system. If, however, through some characteristic of configuration, the temping field within a composite particle displays some irregularity, this will manifest as a vibration. And if the magnitude of the vibration is such as to cause the interpenetrating fields to exceed the half and half point, the whole system will come apart. Radioactivity. When a system does come apart, those fields which were coherent and interpenetrating in the correct proportion will remain and take off down the temping field gradient and become radiated energy. The fields which contribute to the internal attractions of atoms are the electric and magnetic, supplemented by the secondary fields resulting from any further operations between the basic field parameters. These fields form a static pattern, which is dynamic only when temping field irregularities occur. The difference in energy levels is the extent to which the fields are coherent in the proportions to form radiated energy, which can enter or leave the system upon appropriate rearrangement of its components. At this point, it may be well to call attention to a simple but often overlooked principle. Since all reality in this universe must conform to the parameter of form, it must always display the characteristic of being half in and half out. This rule also applies to energy, either quantized or amorphous. Energy always exists in conjunction with its conjugate. In other words, in any reaction involving energy, we see only one half the energy involved. The other half is either inside or outside from our point of concern. It is most fortunate that this is so, otherwise the universe wouldn't work. In developing our understanding of radiated energy, we made certain initial assumptions. That is, that we did have a field upon which we could operate, and that this field was sufficiently detached that the operation was so isolated that it could be considered quite apart from any interaction with other fields or particles. Rather obviously, this does not represent a real condition. In nature, we always find a close association between matter and energy somewhere in the scheme of things, and usually at both ends of the system, so that we should have a closer look at the interaction of matter and energy, always bearing in mind that they are both different aspects of the same reality. The reason that fields curl around to form material particles is because temping fields are generated which increase the time available on one side of the system and decrease it on the other. Therefore, whenever any degree of asymmetry is introduced into a coherent field system, it will change direction, and if the conditions are right for the system to be self-sustaining, a particle will be formed. Conversely, if a discontinuity is introduced, sufficient to disturb the closure of a system, the differences in the temping field distribution will disappear, and the particle will dart off as radiated energy. When particles merge to such an extent that the interpenetration of the fields exceeds the halfway point, and an asymmetry is introduced, a temping field gradient is established away from the system in the direction bisecting the asymmetry, in both directions, so that two bits of radiated energy take off down these gradients. Conversely, when two approximately equal bits of radiated energy merge beyond the halfway point, the deviation in direction of the temping field takes place, which, if it can be maintained, allows the bits of radiated energy to merge into a particle. Within a complex structure of particles, there may be coherent field systems, which, if disturbed, may acquire a linear temping field gradient, and a bit of the reality will take off down this gradient, and radiation will be emitted by that structure. With the curling in on itself of radiated energy, if the geometry is correct, the alternating field aspects flow into a unidirectional arrangement, and conversely, when a particle unwraps to form radiation, a quadrature phase is introduced in the field relationship. With an understanding of the basic particle, the structure of radiated energy, and the transition mechanism, we do in fact have the understanding of how this universe is put together and how it operates. Using the principles already understood, we can explore all the many and varied manifestations of matter and energy and understand just what goes on. Here and there, we can confirm our understanding by reference to experiment in the full knowledge that we will pose our questions correctly and that nature will give us explicit answers. Forces. In the evolution of the 12 parameters of the universe by the operation of the quadrature concept on the basic concept in nothing at all, such questions as the forces involved and the energy which became apparent did not arise. These matters come into being only when the 12 parameters have been established, and we find that what goes on in this universe requires some understanding of these factors. A field is a region which has an unique characteristic. The unique characteristics of fields were established by the operation of the quadrature concept on the space fabric, and then in turn on the fields as each was established. In the earlier stages of this development, before the application of parameters higher than the sixth, we could not discern the presence of these factors in the amorphous background of the field and space fabrics. Only the reality which had been established. Subsequent applications of the quadrature concept provided control and precipitation, but none of the fabrics added anything beyond what existed in nothing at all as perceived by awareness, and all reality which existed or can exist was provided by the Creator in that original state. Awareness merely establishes how it was arranged to establish the universe as we know it. We generally think of a force as something which pulls or pushes against some sort of resistance, and as such, have a pretty fair but superficial idea of what it is. In the establishment of the space fabric, force is what stretched a point into a line and kept it there, and what pulled a line out sideways to make an area and held it there, and what pushed the area apart into a volume and sustained it. Force provided the means by which the density of reality in space was adjusted to form the tempic field, and the means by which the tempic field was given a divergence to establish the electric field, and the means by which the electric field was given a curl to establish the magnetic field, and the means by which these fields are sustained. Force, in turn, establishes the parameters of the control fabric and the precipitation fabric, and makes possible the establishment of matter and energy as we know them. In other words, each operation of the quadrature concept involves a force arrangement, and the magnitude and significance of each of the forces depends on the manipulation carried out and the fabric in which it is being done. Conversely, forces always develop whenever reality is modified, and always in the fabric where the modification takes place. It takes the combined manipulation of all three parameters in any one fabric to extend a force into another fabric, which, needless to say, is a rather special arrangement. We say that energy is the ability to do work, or the ability to establish a force which will operate against a resistance over a certain prescribed distance. But these ideas are not quite basic enough to relate force with the basic reality. Looking at a region of unit size in which there is a field, we note that this field came into being because of the quadrature concept, a force, and is being sustained by this force. The unique characteristic which describes this field says that there is a difference between opposite sides of the unit region in the direction of the field, and therefore the field must be stressed against itself in this direction. And therefore, the reality so expressed is the product of the field intensity with itself, and the total reality within the total field will be the integrated value of this field intensity squared over the entire space occupied by the field, bearing in mind the half-in, half-out relationship of form. Or we can concern ourselves with the reality or energy within a limited region only and perform the integration over that region. There is a very interesting factor which enters the picture at this point called the principle of inversion. If a region is collected in which there are two fields of the same kind, same magnitude, and same direction, such that very nearly half the reality of each is within the region, then the two fields are just on the edge of becoming coherent. If the fields are not coherent, the total energy in the region is the sum of the energies of the two fields. That is, twice the square of the field intensity of each integrated over the region. If, however, the fields are coherent, the total energy is the square of twice the field intensity integrated over the region, or twice the energy of the two fields in coherence. This relationship is most significant as it represents the packing energy of the bits and pieces in the atomic nuclei, and also points the way to the precipitation of energy out of the cosmic background. When we take a look at the mechanics of matter, we find some interesting relationships. Kinetic energy, or energy of change, is one-half the mass times the velocity squared. But the velocity is the reciprocal of the gradient of reality of the Tempic field, from which it appears that the energy is one-half the mass times the Tempic field intensity squared, integrated over the region involved in the change. If the mass is taken as the density of reality times the volume it occupies, the fact that twice as much energy appears indicates that the fields making up matter are coherent. This again is an important relationship as it pertains to the topping up of matter. Gravity. The 12 parameters of the universe are the necessary and sufficient conditions for the establishment of our universe as we know it, and together with the unique position of awareness, forms our entire experience in this physical world. All of which we are, or can be, aware, are expressible in terms of these 12 parameters. Gravity is a phenomenon with which we have daily experience, but about which we haven't learned very much, looking backwards as we do from effect to cause. The fact that objects fall, given an opportunity to do so, experiencing an acceleration which appears to have very nearly the same value on this planet for all falls, leads us to the conclusion that it is somehow an inertial phenomenon. The added fact that ordinary manipulations appear not to affect gravity leads us to the conclusion that somehow gravity is inherent in matter itself.
All of this allow us to...
By studying the effects of gravity and keeping close track of the numerical quantities involved, we have established some rules respecting forces, energy, and interaction, all of which allow us to work with gravity as we find it. But there it stops. Since matter and energy are manifestations of reality entirely within the 12 parameters, we must look for explanations of their behavior within the structure of these parameters. And regardless of any ideas to the contrary, this is where we will find it. The field fabric sets up three and three only fields, which are capable of exercising forces on the field structure which constitute matter and energy. So gravity must be used to operate on one or more of the fields
to which we have access. Is really the fact that
observation indicates when gravity falls off.
And the best we can do is to integrate the effects of the field, not the field itself, to produce a pulling force in a limited region.
The fact that we can...
The inertial effect
in the application of the metric fields to which we have access is due to the fact that we cannot make the canceling fields coherent. And the best we can do is to integrate the effects of the fields, not the fields themselves, to produce an opposing force in a limited region. The inertial approach involves the application of a particular Tempic field gradient, carefully adjusted so that its effects are consistent with observation. But this implies certain flexibilities in the space fabric inconsistent with its established linear nature. Another inertial concept of gravity is the all-pervading microparticular gas, the units of which impinge on matter and through an exchange of momentum press the matter together. The difficulty of this concept is the necessity for explaining the inflow of energy to matter and implies either an energy sink within the matter or an obscure energy exchange phenomenon between the regions within and without matter. When the basic particle was being considered, it was established that four kinds of particles were possible. Right-hand and left-hand spin, and right-hand and left-hand precession, which gave particles having positive charges with plus and minus increments, and negative charges with plus and minus increments, all having the same magnetic moment and centric field. Within these particles, and within systems made up of them as atoms, etc., there is field coherence, so that there are specific values for these fields determined by the particles themselves, and outside of them, the fields will also be quite specific. Looking at the model of the basic particle, it is noted that the electric field is a dynamic condition resulting from the mutual interaction of the three basic fields. But since the centric field is a gradient, it is in itself not motional. And the radial component of the electric field being divergent and having no component along either of the centric field gradient directions also is not motional. And these fields are essentially static so long as the particle itself doesn't move or change. However, the skew component of the electric field due to the precession does have a component along a centric field gradient and is motional. Therefore, field coherence is possible within the static structure due to spin, but not within the dynamic structure due to precession, unless the configuration is such that the skew field can comply with the half-in and half-out form condition. From the foregoing, it is fairly obvious that only matter having the same direction of precession will assemble into large aggregates. First, because of the selective action of the differences in forces resulting from the differences in electric charges. And second, because the interpenetration of particles of opposite precession will introduce an asymmetry in the system, resulting in its immediate conversion into radiated energy. There are, however, a few special configurations where fairly large aggregates are involved, where the initial field already had an asymmetry which could be offset by the asymmetry introduced by the particle with the reverse precession, and the whole system could then be stable. In the evolution of our universe, we would expect a separation process to take place, which would result in matter of essentially the same precession congregating together, and a fairly quick conversion to radiated energy of particles of opposite precession which happen to wander into such regions. In considering the integration of basic particles to form the larger units of matter, there is a slight advantage for the particles with the larger total electric charge to so integrate, because stable configurations will permit coherence of the skew fields. In any aggregate system such as a planet, there is bound to be a continual circulation of particles, both basic and composite, so that after many cycles of such circulation, most of the big ones congregate in the nuclei and the little ones take up outer positions. This is the condition which we find now as we inspect the matter to which we have access. When the aforementioned separation has taken place, and most of the particles of opposite precession have been eliminated, we find that the system contains nuclei having one specific charge, with electron shells having the opposite charge. The matter on planet Earth has positive charges dominant in the nucleus and negative charges in the shells, and as free particles. Elsewhere in the universe, there will be an aggregate of the converse relationship. An aggregate of matter such as we have on Earth, where the sort out is reasonably complete, will be electrically neutral so far as the electric fields are concerned, as determined by the summation of the effects of the fields, and may or may not have a magnetic moment depending on how random is the orientation of the various particles, again determined by the summation of the effects of the fields, and a centric field which will be the direct scalar summation of the many contributing centric fields. It will also have the skew electric fields of the same polarity as the nuclei. With the exception of the skew fields, all the other external fields of the aggregate may be considered as static because they have no component of the centric field at right angles to them, The spin fields, on the other hand, are dynamic because they do have a quadrature centric field component. Furthermore, the spin fields are largely incoherent simply because the normal, almost random orientation precludes their meeting the half-in, half-out requirement of form to become coherent. Since the skew fields do have a tempic field component at right angles, they will generate an electric field throughout the entire region of the same polarity as the static electric field to which they are additive. Such an aggregate may be considered as having two electric fields, one of which is subject to cancellation by surrounding electrical particle fields, and the other not so subject. Partial cancellation is possible, and if the aggregate is left to its own devices, will be attained by a surrounding shell of particles of the opposite polarity, so that externally to the entire system, the effects of the fields will be a minimum and electrically neutral. However, if another aggregate of similar precession enters the vicinity, such cancellation can no longer be approximated, and the skew field induces an electric field within this aggregate, which amounts to an electric field distortion or polarization. A convenient way of discussing what happens is to consider the skew fields and the polarization in terms of electric charges, even though this concept is not strictly correct. If the primary aggregate is considered to have a charge which induces the polarization in the secondary aggregate, this polarization will be equivalent to a charge displacement such that the product of the displaced charges and the distance through which they are displaced will be a statement of the amount of polarization. This will be located in the electric field of the primary aggregate and will have two forces acting which will be numerically equal, one maintaining the polarization and the other between the polarization and the primary field. Therefore, the net force will be the product of the primary field divergence and the square of the polarization in the secondary aggregate. There are, of course, other ways of establishing this relationship, but they all say the same thing in other words, which is that gravity is a dynamic field function and is the product of the gravitational field divergence and the square of the polarization induced in the attracted bit of matter, with the gravitational field being merely the skew electric field. Having established the nature of gravity and its formula, we may now see what can be done with it. Since it is essentially an electric field phenomenon, albeit not an electrostatic one, its distribution and behavior will be much the same as any other electric field except for its dynamic characteristic. Altering the polarization will alter the force exerted by gravity, but because this is a square relationship, no such alteration can make the force negative, that is, to operate in the opposite direction. However, altering the divergence will alter the magnitude and direction of the force, and the trick for controlling gravity is precisely this. Since the gravitational field is due to the skew electric field, or stated differently, to the induction from the motional magnetic field, this is the logical reason to explore for the mechanism by which fields may be produced to combine with the gravitational field to produce a resultant having a divergence more to our liking. In taking a quick look at the gravitational relationships of the basic particles alone, there are some interesting aspects. Since in an established region, practically all the precessions are the same, the free particles will have a motional field of polarity the same as the particles making up the composite ones, and therefore they will be repelled by gravity. This repulsion, however, will be quite a bit less than the electrostatic attraction, so a compromise position will be established at such a distance that everything will be in equilibrium. In the atomic structure, there are therefore the electric field forces holding the electrons onto the nucleus, the magnetic field forces fixing them in position, the gravitational forces tending to push them away and resulting in a compromised location. With the tempic field contributing to the dynamic conditions within and contiguous to the structure,
All these forces have been developed from the basic concepts already put forward and are possible of confirmation by experiment if we ask nature the right questions. These same forces extend beyond the atom into molecular chemistry, crystal forms, and amorphous aggregates. Within the atomic nuclei, these same forces exist, together with others resulting from the interpenetration of the fields and their coherence. Matter, though magnificently complex, is elegantly simple in its basic structure when understood. We have used a number of unusual terms in this discourse, and I would like now to give a few definitions of them. Aggregate, the physical assembly of particles as separate units. Amorphous, the assembly of matter in which control is largely random. Awareness, the relationship between a being and all else. Coherence, the condition when two or more fields of the same kind and direction combine into a single field. Creator, the primary cause for the existence of awareness, reality, and its perception. Crystal, an assembly of matter in which control is largely sequential. Fabric, the grouping of three of the basic parameters according to derivation and contiguous characteristics. Integration, the summation of bits of the same kind into a whole. Parameter, one of the 12 basic principles upon which all reality perceived by awareness is based. Precipitation, bringing reality totally within the perception of awareness. Personal, pertaining to the identity of a being. Plasm, the assembly of matter in which control is largely free will. Quadrature, a special operation by which a broadside, that is, at right angles, relationship is established. Skew, the geometrical configuration in which certain fields have tangential as well as radial components. Tempic, the field parameter of change. Tensor, pertaining to a configuration of radiated energy which is self-enclosed.